If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast by two guys who are more than a little embarrassed to have a podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation. I am Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
How embarrassed are you today, Ben?
Oh, you know, less so than normal.
Really?
I had fun with this episode.
I have a baseline level of embarrassment that would shock.
I think that I go through life feeling a little bit embarrassed about just about everything. So, having this show has not amplified my embarrassment that much.
Yeah, except, like, no one knew who I was before this show. And now they know me for all the wrong reasons.
I think that there's something to living your truth, though. Like being a dorkosaur out in the open is somehow, it eats at your soul less than being a dorkazord in the shadows.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a good goal to have.
Yeah.
I need to live my truth.
Yeah. Go out and buy some cargo shorts and Super Nintendo Entertainment System t-shirts and,
some back issues of Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
And brush up.
Yeah. And you know, people will know you for who you are, and you're going to be a happier person for it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm feeling a lot of, like, inner conflict about this whole thing. You got to let it go.
Just let that shit go.
Ben, why don't you take us through the Peabody Award-winning episode, The Big Goodbye?
Okay, so the Enterprise is heading for Torona 4 to talk to the Haradan, who we're told are an insect-like race that are fanatically devoted to issues of protocol. And so Picard is going to have to greet them in their own language perfectly in order to satisfy their incredibly exacting standards. So he spends a lot of time in his ready room at the beginning of the episode working on the pronunciation, and he's apparently looking at some pronunciation guide that doesn't actually illuminate it because there's all these little technical rules, like if there's a squiggle after the Z, then you hold the Z, but if there are three lines, you know, it's like
three wavy lines.
Yeah, they've managed to apply technobabble to linguistics, showing the true prowess of Star Trek writers.
Did you notice that Picard, it was so, like, hunkered down in his studies that they covered up his window?
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, there was a big silver panel over the window that looks out into space.
Wow, it doesn't want to get distracted by them nebulae.
I guess not.
So Troy is like, Captain, you're stressing. Why don't you blow off some steam in the holodeck? They've just been refitted and upgraded, and you just need to get your mind off this. Stop stressing about it. So
more rocks than ever is the upgrade. Now with better rocks.
Now with more plausible rocks.
Now it's waterproof.
So Picard wanders down to the holodeck, and we get like a captain's log explaining what the holodeck is. Just kind of a weird choice, given that we are now 11 episodes into this, and the holodeck has come up on like a good many of the episodes so far. But he fires up this Dixon Hill program, which is a hard-boiled private detective Dashiell Hammett-type story set in San Francisco in the 40s. And he goes into his office, and his you know, Brooklyn-accented secretary is very amused at his bellhop uniform, which is what she interprets his Starfleet uniform to be. And there begins
pretty
to be... yeah, it's pretty good. There begins to be a running gag that he lost a bet to all the characters in the holodeck. So he's gonna play this detective, and this leggy dame hires him to find out who's trying to kill her. And he's about to start his adventure when he decides to pause the program and check in on their progress getting to Torona 4. So they have like a conference where it seems like it seems almost as though Captain Picard has convened a conference to tell his senior staff about how much he enjoyed his little make-believe holodeck experience.
Yeah, he's going on and on about how real it is. And meanwhile, like, he's been walking around with lipstick on his face.
Yeah, his crew lets him stand there telling them all this shit while he has a lipstick kiss on his mouth from one of the holodeck characters.
Riker's, like, fully leaned back from the conference room table, like, looking at him over his nose, like, I've had way worse things stuck to my face after a session in the holodeck. Like, you fucking rube. I have bruises under my uniform right now.
Will Riker and the holodeck jokes ever get old? I think not. So Picard decides to invite Dr. Crusher and this 20th century historian who's for some reason stationed aboard the Enterprise to join him on the holodeck. And
that invitation is so awkward, though.
Yeah,
like, Beverly is like inches away from his face, wiping off another woman's makeup. She's like, can I come along? And Picard's like, sure, sounds great. Oh, you know who else we should bring? It's our 20th century expert. And Beverly is like she's been punched in the stomach, crushed.
Yeah.
Like, that was another instance of Beverly, again, like, making a pass at Picard. Picard just
misses
being oblivious.
It.
Yeah. Like, he's not even turning her down at this point. He just doesn't understand.
Yeah. You have to wonder about what type of game he's playing with her, or if he's genuinely oblivious.
He may be only interested in childish games.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Picard and Waylon, the historian, prepare to re-enter the holodeck, this time in period-appropriate costumes. And Data pops off of the nearby turbo lift and asks if he can come too. And Picard's like, all right, come along. And they go in and they discover... They're sort of walking around like an exterior scene, and they purchase a newspaper and discover that the lady that had hired Dixon Hill has been killed. And then no sooner do they find this out than a couple of plainclothes detectives come and pick him up and take him down to the police station.
The scene where they enter, though, I thought was pretty awesome from a technical standpoint. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think this is the first time that they open up, let you see the ship from inside a complex set.
Yeah.
A complex holodeck set. Like, typically, when we're inside the holodeck, we're seeing a bunch of rocks and a psych. And the door looks like it could be practical. Like, it looks like it belongs there anyway. But this is the first time we're actually in a totally different scene.
Yeah, this is like a Hollywood backlot of like an urban place. Like,
it probably is used to be New York on more TV shows than anything, but this is being set up to be San Francisco, although I guess every character they interact with has a New York accent, which is a little a little bit stupid. But
they might not even know the difference, though, in the 24th century. Like, an accent's an accent, probably.
That's a good point. Given that they consider French to be an ancient language.
Anyway, I just thought it was really cool. Like,
it was cool. There's like a wide shot with like, you know, period costumes and cars. And then in the background, you see like the hallway on the Enterprise just beyond the door to the
The difference is the depth. You usually see it like sort of in profile or in three quarter, but you can actually see like all the way down.
And it's genuinely awesome.
Yeah, and it holds up too. Like, this is 1988.
Yeah.
FX aren't usually this good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if it was now, you would like throw in some sort of motion-controlled camera movement and like really revel in the fact that it's two spaces that shouldn't be connected being connected. But
look, this is Peabody level effects work right here. I think we can agree.
I agree.
I mean, that's what they give the Peabody for.
If I know the Peabody, that's what they give it for. Back in the real world, the Enterprise is kind of entering Haradan space, and they are scanned at long distance by the Haradan. And this is like a very invasive scanning technique because there's like pink light traveling around the ship, and it causes the ship to shake. And as the pink light passes over the control panel for the holodeck, the panel flickers, and you can tell that something has gone wrong. So when Dr. Crusher shows up a second later to go into the holodeck, like, the door opens halfway and then closes, surprising her before it opens all the way up and lets her in.
Yeah, and it's like going into a supermarket in the bad part of town. Like, the automatic door is just not working right.
Mm-hmm. As a lifelong goer into of supermarkets in the bad part of town.
You've gone into for years, haven't you?
Hashtag can confirm.
That checks out.
I guess Riker kind of gets on the radio with the Haradan, and the Haradan are saying, like, we're expecting to be addressed by the captain, and we're going to be really insulted if it's anybody but the captain. And I guess we know that they've, like, destroyed entire starships for insulting them in the past, so there's some stakes here. The crew starts trying to call the captain up to the bridge, but find that the holodeck is incommunicado with the rest of the ship. The doors won't open, and the Haradan signal has affected the holodeck's functions. The people inside the holodeck find this out when they head back to Dixon Hill's office after the police turn them loose, and a bunch of gangsters show up, and one of them shoots the Waylon guy, the historian character, and it actually draws blood, and his life is actually imperiled. It's like the holodeck usually has safeties, and somehow this Haradan probe has disabled them.
This was a really surprising scene, I bet, because to me, Waylon was like the ultimate red shirt. Like,
yeah.
They didn't even introduce him properly. He just sort of glommed on to Picard as he's going into the holodeck. He has no introduction at all.
Right.
And then he's shot moments later. Like, that figures.
Yeah. And like, I mean, he would have been a red shirt anyways, because if you're the captain of a ship and you're like, who do we have? Like, we have to beam somebody down that's almost certainly going to, you know, be in mortal danger. And we have 1,000 people on this ship. Why don't we beam down the guy who's an expert in 20th century history? Like, how fucking expendable are you if that's your expertise in this environment?
He thought he was safe.
Yeah.
You think those holodeck bullets aren't gonna kill you, but they clearly do.
So Dr. Crusher starts trying to care for this guy's wound, and Picard and Data realize that the holodeck is malfunctioning because they can't, you know, call up the door or pause the program or anything. And they're in this kind of standoff scene with these gangsters, the boss of which is Cyrus Redblock, a bald, you know, mean, but obviously very smart villain who's demanding a certain object, and you, every time one of these characters brings up a certain object, you can feel the finger quotes that they want to be doing around it, and it's obviously like supposed to be like a Maltese Falcon like MacGuffin, but they never even name. It's like
they don't give
like
it. They the forgot to
give the MacGuffin an interesting name.
I was so happy when Cyrus showed up because he's played by one of those classic that guys.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Lawrence Tierney. It's Joe Cabot from Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
And that made me real happy. He is just the greatest at chewing up scenes.
Yeah. A ton of charisma, and there's a lot of fun stuff where, you know, like Data doesn't, you know, they can tell there's something is wrong with Data, but you know, since they're holodeck characters, they won't be able to wrap their mind around him being an android, but they do a lot of trying to explain what the holodeck is, and Red Block is like, yeah, enough of your bullshit. Like,
he's so great. His voice is so awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like if Robert Loggia drops a script, Lawrence Tierney is going to grab it before it hits the ground. Like, if you need a gravelly voice, tough guy, like Lawrence Tierney's it.
Totally.
If you can't get Loggia.
Yep. So outside the holodeck, Wesley and Geordi are working frantically to figure out how to save the folks inside. And Wesley has used this diagnostic tool to figure out that that the holodeck has, I guess, turned the crew into holograms themselves. So if he turns off the system, it might just restore them to being people, but it might turn them off as well, in effect. So
that seems like a bug that they wouldn't really allow.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that to leave the factory before you figured out how to avoid that little problem from arising.
It's great that that the way Wes figures this out is through like looking through a microscope type device. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my birdie. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month. For a limited time at ritual.com/scarves, start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves. For 25% off.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Vice.
Yeah, that's like stowed in the wall with all of the circuit
boards.
What is
he looking at?
I guess he's like, I guess there's like miniature little circuit boards in there that they have. I mean.
See, I thought for a second he was actually looking at the scene. Like he's looking at what's happening in the holodeck.
Oh, that's interesting. No, because he doesn't really talk about what's going on in there.
There is no way Riker would allow that either.
Yeah, yeah. If that device was in that wall panel,
you
Riker
want to disable
has,
that.
Riker has confiscated all of those.
Yeah, that's what he puts his sock on before he goes in.
They decide, like, you know, there's a risk definitely that everybody in the holodeck is going to die, but the Haradin are going to kill us all. If the captain doesn't make it up to the bridge pretty soon, so it's sort of do or die, and Riker orders them to attempt a shutdown of the holodeck, and for whatever reason, the way this manifests itself from the perspective of the characters inside is that the doors open. And then they're like, yeah, see, Mr. Redblock, you are on a holodeck. Like, you are on a spaceship in space, and that's the door to our world. And he gets, like, really excited that he's going to be able to commit crime on a whole new level in a whole new environment.
A whole new world of plunder.
And he and his henchman, Mr. Leech, walk out into the hallway of the Enterprise, which is, for some reason, empty. Like, Geordi and Wesley and Riker are not out there.
That's a great call. I didn't pick that up.
I guess it must just be a different door. It doesn't make any sense that they're not there.
Yeah. Yeah, they should be there.
There's only one door in and out of the holodeck, right?
As far as I know.
Yeah. So that's a weird little
That's a pretty
error.
Big continuity error.
But anyways, they walk out and they slowly start to disappear, and there's some pretty funny, like, you know, 1940s complaints about the fact that they are vanishing into thin air.
What is this? What are they doing? They can't do this to me. Don't they know who I am?
At no point did they attempt to walk 2 feet back into where they came from, though.
Well, their feet disappeared. How could they walk?
They're pretty content to just stand there being slowly chewed up like the photograph from Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, like, the way they disappear is definitely in the same order and in the same direction as the photograph from Back to the Future.
It's a timeless effect.
So, despite the fact that time is of the essence, Picard walks back into the holodeck after releasing the Doctor and Data to get Waylon back to the sick bay, and has a little, like, sort of debriefs with the detective character that's also been part of this whole standoff situation. And the detective character is, like, clearly pretty sad to be seeing Dixon Hill go and doesn't really understand the fact that he's going to the real world where he's the captain of a spaceship. And they have this really weirdly emotional goodbye scene where the character says, I guess this is the big goodbye.
And then they both turn to camera for a beat.
There's definitely, like, there was definitely a moment where I thought they might lean in and just tenderly kiss each other on the lips.
They had exactly, like, six lines with each other the entire show. But there is a gravity to that scene that we're supposed to really appreciate. And I didn't.
I sort of feel like they might have come up with the title of the episode before they came up with exactly what happened, and then they
wrote
like,
it backwards.
Oh shit, there's not like a love interest character really, so we can't have him say that to her, so we'll just tack this little scene on to justify the
title.
Is
that the unrequited love? Is that what we're meant to understand?
Yeah, it's very strange. But so
God, everyone wants Picard's junk, huh?
Sure do. Except for the one person that keeps getting it.
The boy?
So Picard runs up to the bridge of the Enterprise. He says the nonsense that he's been practicing.
Klaxon Ries Blajblan Agnik. Karnik. Ad. Trasulah. Trasulah.
The Haradan accept it, saying that it will be the beginning of a new era of peace and diplomacy between their people. And then that's it. Like, the Enterprise just leaves. Like, that's all they came to do.
It's so weird. And you never see them either, which was such a fucking tease, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're described as being scary insect things.
Yeah.
And look, if they were never going to look at them, why don't you just have Data use Picard's voice and say the greeting perfectly and then nail the test, right?
Totally.
They could have totally cheated.
Damok and Jalad at Tanagra.
There was one scene that I really wanted to talk about, which is in the as they're like leaving the police station, the doctor is in her period costume and waiting for them to leave, and she's kind of watching a holographic woman put on some foundation makeup and check her hair in her little compact mirror, and the doctor is kind of like imitating this because it's all very new to her as a future woman, and then like the captain comes out and they definitely like make plans to go back to his like to Dixon Hill's office for sexy time before Data can I come too?
Which is the second cock block that Data does in the episode.
Yeah,
Data, they're totally gonna desk fuck, and Data blows it.
Data blows it for them, and it's the first. You know, maybe this had been the way that Picard, reacquaints himself with the pleasures of adult consensual sex.
Beverly gets hit on in that scene, also.
Yeah, by the sergeant, the desk sergeant.
The sergeant, what's funny about this scene is like the sergeant offers her a piece of gum. Beverly knows enough about what gum is that she takes it, takes it out of the wrapper, puts it in her mouth and chews it. But the punchline is that she swallows it like, oh, silly Beverly doesn't know what to do with chewing gum. But like, how did she ever get that far? Like, if she knows enough about chewing gum to know that you unwrap it and put it in your mouth, why is she swallowing it?
Adam, I just want you to reflect on the fact that you are...
It makes me so angry!
Recording a podcast where you're complaining about a character not knowing quite how chewing gum works in a sci-fi television show from the 80s.
I would like you to edit out the last 90 seconds, please. My future depends on it. My social future, my professional future, everything.
I'll see what I can do.
That was not a Peabody award-winning comment right there by me. That was a disaster.
If it's going to make the episode any worse, I'm not going to edit it out, but I promise you that I will do my best to reduce how embarrassing this is for you.
Well, thanks.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah, Adam.
Who's your drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I think mine in this episode is Geordi.
And my reasoning is they're radioing to get the captain up to the bridge, and it turns out he's on the holodeck and they can't reach him. So Riker tells Geordi, like, go down there and figure out what's going on. Geordi tries to get in and can't, and basically becomes useless for the rest of the episode. Like, he radios back up, like, I can't get in here, there's nothing I can do. It takes Wesley insisting to Riker on going down there and trying to figure out how to get the doors open before anybody is really proactively working on this problem. And we know that Geordi is, like, technically savvy, but he fucking just stands there and doesn't do shit. Like, his visor's got to be at least as good as that diagnostic tool that Wesley is using to scan the circuit boards or whatever. And he's, like, literally just standing there. Like, he's, like, precious time is being wasted because Geordi just doesn't really step up and try to fix the problem.
I mean, those are the actions of a man who, I mean, I'm not thinking of him for chief engineer at this point, that's for sure. I mean, if this is a job interview, you can forget it. Like, that's not demonstrating potential.
Yeah.
That's not going above and beyond.
This is, and I guess he's kind of lucky that Picard wasn't really around to observe this bullshit.
My drunk Shimoda is Data, actually. And the reason for that is he is the guy that doesn't pick up on social cues. Like, yeah. He crashes Picard's party twice. And,
totally.
You know, I'm going to give a half Shimoda to Picard because they just let it happen. Like, you can say no to Data. You're the captain. Hey, Data, why don't you sit this one out?
And the great thing about Data is his feelings aren't going to be hurt.
Yeah.
Like, he'll take that shit at face value.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And he won't do it for some reason. This happens over and over again. Picard is too nice.
Yeah.
And that to me earns them a little bit of fractional Shimoda for each of them.
A little dusting of Shimoda. Manner.
Yeah, just a little sprinkle of Shimoda.
I am Locutus of Borg. You are Borg. I am Locutus of Borg. You will assist us.
The next episode we have coming up is episode 12, Data Lore. Data's android lookalike formulates an evil master plan that could destroy the Enterprise. What do you remember about this episode, Adam?
This is the one where they find, like junk parts, like Data junk parts, right?
Yeah,
Data,
it's like
Data puts them all together.
The laboratory where Data was constructed, and they had no idea that there was another Soong-type android in the universe, but it turns out there is, and it's a dead ringer for Data.
Because, in fact, he is played by the same actor. Is that why?
No, I think it's like an Olsen Twins type situation.
Oh yeah.
It's Brent Spiner and Fred Spiner.
I love Fred Spiner.
Oh, he's the best.
You know, he never got the big break like Brent did, though.
Yeah.
The reception of this was pretty unkind.
Have we come across an episode that hasn't had unkind? The big goodbye was the.
Yeah, I mean, this one's not getting the Peabody, that's for sure. Lore seems to lack any motivation for what he was intending to do and makes the crew look pretty stupid.
I feel like Lore's just a sociopath, though, right? Like, that's the reason that he wasn't the final model, was that he was amoral.
I mean, now we're getting into an area where I just don't remember that level of detail about the episode. So, sure.
Well, I'm excited to see this one. Even if I had a veto, I wouldn't use it.
Yeah, I don't think I would either. I'm excited to see this one.
I like all the, like, Data backstory episodes. There's not that many of them, but I think they're always pretty good, right?
It gives Brent Spiner, I'm going to be clear, I'm not just going to use Spiner given what we know about his twin brother. I'm going to give him a lot of credit. He tends to do a great job when he's given a lot to do in an episode. So,
yeah,
looking forward to it.
Yeah. Make it so. All right. Well, I think that is all the time we have for this episode. And I've had a lot of fun talking about Star Trek The Next Generation with you, Adam.
Yeah, yeah, that was tons of fun. And the best part is no one heard it.
Yep.
Just a private conversation between you and me.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I've been Ben Harrison.
I'm still Adam Pranica. See you next time.